time, hard time, about to drive me wild. Take a big fat woman, work it down to my boogie inside. I keep on a drinking, try to drive my blues away. Say the sun going to shine in my back door someday. Said I wouldn't keep on a drinking if I could help my boogie self. Wouldn't be loving you if I could love someone else. I keep on drinking, try to drive my blues away. Said the sun going to shine in my back door someday. Play that thing, boy. Tell nobody I ain't gonna drink no more.
Never do that.
I don't feel welcome no place I go. I keep on drinking, try to drive my blues away. Say the sun gonna shine.
You know that song is right there, Vinny?
What's that song, Brian?
It's a song by a man who just won't give up.
Won't give up drinking.
He just keeps on drinking. He may be crazy. He's ain't nobody's fool. He just keeps on drinking. It's Tuesday, March 23rd, 2010. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. This is the fourth show.
How are you feeling?
Actually, this is the fifth show in the last 24 hours.
That's true.
Because in the last 24 hours, I did a show with Dave. What in God's name am I thinking? I don't know. But luckily for everybody, I'm in a foul mood. God, I'm in a bad mood. Mostly because I'm really hungry.
That's amazing. I just saw you eat.
Oh, God. It didn't even... It was like... I feel like a dead man. I feel like a man who's dead. And no matter how much food you shove down my throat, I cannot be satisfied.
I believe that's exactly what Captain Barbossa said in Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's what I feel like!
Okay.
You know how badly I would like to taste an apple right now?
You feel like an undead pirate.
I feel like an undead pirate.
Hmm.
I'm trimming down.
Ah.
It's been a long time since I've been on a diet. I realize that the heavier members of the website are going to be upset to hear that I'm on a diet after hitting a massive 156 pounds. But it happened. 156.
If you're referring to me, I don't care.
I feel my peak is right around 147. And once in my life, I was 195 pounds.
I recall that.
A pure, legit porker. No other way to describe it.
Although, to your credit, you did at the time do a great job of disguising it.
I did. But what happened was, it snuck up on me. I realize that when you've been 135, 140 pounds all through high school and your early 20s, you wonder, how can 195 pounds sneak up on you? Well, you see, I was lifting weights. I went into a powerlifting regimen for a while. I once totaled 1,000 pounds. I was doing these really heavy squats and deadlifts and bench press, eating a lot of food. And I just thought, my God, I'm getting muscular. Look at the size of my chest. Not realizing that my gut was growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you realize it, but as you start to get fatter, it's been a while since you got fatter, Vinny. Like, noticeably fatter. Like, when you hit 285, I didn't notice. Now
that's not true. Because you told me the initial Tulalip appearance where everyone talked about how fat I was... And I told you on the show that seeing myself made me realize how fat I was. Then you confessed that you had been telling people after I left the show, geez, Vince is getting fat.
I'd forgotten that.
All right.
Maybe I just told you that to make you feel worse. But regardless, now when you were once, many people will find this hard to believe, but Vince was once like 170 pounds.
When I was in high school, I have a picture of myself at this size. I was very slightly shorter than I am now. I was about 6'1". I weighed 160 pounds.
6'1 and 160.
6'1, 160.
Now, when you ballooned up, I mean, did you notice this process, or did you wake up one day and realize you were 250?
Woke up one day and realized I was 250.
Because it sneaks up on you.
I was aware I was gaining weight, but I didn't realize how fat I had gotten until one day it hit me.
You see, when you really put on a lot of weight, for those of you that either haven't or have forgotten what it's like. Like I said, I was working out. I was lifting real heavy weights. I was eating a lot of food. I was getting very, very strong. And so your pants start getting a little tighter. So what do? You think, my lower back is getting so muscular. That's what I said to myself.
You rationalize.
I rationalized. And then all of a sudden, one day, you just look in the mirror and you go, it was actually a photograph. I wish I had this photograph. I had it in my Geo Metro, and when that car died and my dad took it, a lot of stuff that was in it I never saw again. But there was a picture of me standing outside a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That's a bad sign right there.
It was. My face was like completely round. I mean, you could tell that I was a heavy weightlifter, but you could also tell I was one of those heavy weightlifters that ate all the time. I was.
And you did.
Massive. So anyway, this was not quite as bad because I only made it from like 147 to 156, only about 9 pounds. But it was the same thing. It was like, you know, my pants started getting a little tighter. Mm. I thought, well, I've started taking creatine again. And then sort of, you know, things start getting a little tighter in the chest and you think, well, you know, I used to be doing a circuit, but now I'm concentrating on old school weightlifting. 3 sets of 15 on the bench press. I must be putting some muscle back on. Rationalizing it to myself.
Yes.
You know, my face is a little rounder. I must just be bloated. I have too much salt on my rice. Any Spanish rice has got salt in it, you know? Seasonings?
Sure.
These were how I rationalized. And then one day I just realized, no, you have gotten, you're overweight.
You put on 10 pounds of fat.
You're overweight for yourself. So anyway, I've been trimming down. It's been 10 days now.
Mm.
Down to 151. I dropped 3 pounds of water immediately, which brought me down to 153, and I've since lost about 2 pounds. Things are going all right. But I am so ravenously hungry. So ravenously hungry. Just fills me with anger and rage. Which brings me to Vince Russo. I mentioned this briefly in the Daily Update today. And I said if my dander was still up, I was going to talk about it here on this program.
Where is your dander now?
Oh, way up.
It's up? Okay.
My dander is such that I can't buckle my pants around it.
That sounds lewd.
So in the Tuesday update, I put a link to... It's not really an interview that Vince Russo did. It was actually... He talked about Paul Heyman, and then there were some quotes from his book. It's from the UK Sun. The interview is linked in the Tuesday news update. I just want to read some of this to everybody. My dander is not up enough to really lose my mind, but I do want to acknowledge this while I'm still in a pretty bad mood. Before I play a song, for example, or talk about Impact and Raw, which really weren't all that bad. In the final chapter, Russo tells fans, and this, of course, is Rope Opera, how WCW killed Vince Russo. And that right there, that title, how WCW killed Vince Russo. Yeah. Vince Russo was an innocent bystander in this whole fall. Standards and practices, wrestlers not doing what they were asked to do. How WCW killed Vince Russo. Well, first off, the temerity of this fucker.
Well, that's on a sheer factual level. WCW is dead. Vince Russo is not.
So something's wrong.
Yes. As we've established, he has no grasp of reality.
So in the final chapter, Russo tells fans, quote, "And one last thing, for the record, I called Paulie personally to ask him to join TNA. He declined." So I guess we're supposed to think that Russo did all he could. All he could to help TNA. Russo also pays glowing tribute to his wife Amy and three children, Will, VJ, and Annie. He writes, "I cry when I think of all the sacrifices the family have made for a business that will never give a damn about any of us. A business that will never know any of you personally, but wanted to take you all down at my expense. I apologize for the time I took from each of you while handing it to a locker room full of ungrateful wrestlers who only cared about themselves, with the exception of a few. I can't get that time back, and I know that it was a mistake. To those fans who supported me over the years, thank you. I'm just grateful that at least some of you got it." Oh, yeah. Just go on our board. There's a couple people there that have got it. To the critics, the negativity hurt, and it still does. If that was your intent, bravo. You win. I lose. I hope no other person has to endure the kind of criticism I've had to. What hurt the most of all is that those taking the cheap shots never knew me, never knew what I was about. At the end of the day, I was a man just trying to support his family. Nothing more, nothing less. What a load of bullshit. What a load of complete bullshit that is right there. I read that and got so pissed off. Poor old Vince Russo.
He's a victim.
He's a victim. The guy, he's just trying to feed his family. How dare guys like me come on this show and talk about how stupid his writing is? How dare we? He's just trying to feed his family. How dare we take cheap shots at Vince Russo? Listen. If anybody can go back, how many shows have we done? How many Brian V shows? Literally, like, 600 of them. Somebody did a count the other day, over 600 Brian and Vinny shows or something like that, which I see you immediately hang your head in shame on the microphone. We've done over 600 shows. You go back, you find a single time prior to today that I have ever said the names Will, VJ, and Annie. Until this moment, I had no fucking idea what his family's, what his children, what his wife's name was. I've never said a goddamn thing about the guy's family. I've never even said anything negative about Vince Russo as a person. I've said many times.
Well, you did call him an idiot.
He is an idiot. He's an idiot at his job.
Yes.
He is a goddamn idiot at his job. What the fuck does that have to do with him as a person?
Don't know.
I've never said anything like, man, this guy should be killed.
I may have.
Man, this guy, his family should be taken from him.
Don't think I ever said that.
Man, what a poor father this guy is. Yeah. You ever heard me say anything like that? I don't give a fuck what Vince Russo does in his home life. I may have made jokes like, you know, maybe tells his kids to get ready for school and then takes him to the dentist. It's a swerve. I may have said shit like that, but it's a joke. It's not even a negative thing. Maybe he does do that. I don't know. If it does that make him a bad father? No, he's a jokester. I've never said a goddamn negative thing about Vince Russo personally. I've said I'm sure he's a great guy.
Well, Brian, when you take your work as seriously as Vince Russo does, criticizing his work is criticizing him personally.
That's his problem, not mine. It's not my problem.
I'm playing devil's advocate,
it's not
dude.
My. Now, I will say this. I will say this about Vince Russo's. Vince Russo has a flaw as a human being, as we all do. Some more than others. Vince Russo has the flaw that he can't take responsibility for anything in his work. Maybe he takes responsibility for shit he does at home. I don't know. I don't give a fuck what he does in his home life. But my God, have you ever heard an interview with Vince Russo asking about mistakes he has made?
In fact, I have. I've heard interviewers try to ask him about that, but they have made a fatal flaw for he has never made mistakes.
Well, no, it's not even that. It's an interview with Vince Russo is completely useless because you will ask him why he did a certain thing and he'll say, bro, I know. And he'll go, yeah, you know, you're right, this and that, but this happened, and this happened, and I ended up having to do this, and the talent wouldn't do this, and standards and fucking practices, and it's always somebody else's fault. Vince Russo's flaw is that he can't accept the fact that he doesn't know what he's doing at his job. That is a massive flaw. Listen, if I ran a business and clearly I was doing everything wrong, you'd think I'd have to make some changes. I mean, if our subscription numbers were badly plummeting, let's say that I brought you on board in 2006 as part of the 2005 as part of the Brian and Vinny show. Let's say we had 100 subscribers,
okay.
And I brought you on board, and the next day 10 people quit.
Well, to be fair, that is what we both expected to happen.
And then we did another show, and 10 more people quit. And the next thing you know, I've got 10 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go, huh, something ain't working here. Let's get rid of this fucker.
Right.
You'd be history. Because you see what's working and what's not working, and you do something about it. Vince Russo has an inability to do that.
Vince Russo in that situation would have given me a raise.
He would have.
Yes.
He would have given you the show.
Sure.
He would have taken him off the show and just given you the show to run solo, and then he'd be baffled why it wasn't working. He'd blame our server, the server company. He'd blame Google, China. He'd find somebody to put the blame on other than you. Same thing with Vince Russo. The guy has absolutely no idea what he's doing. He doesn't learn. He never learns from wrestling history. He never learns from what's right and wrong. But this all has to do with his job. Nobody ever takes cheap shots at Vince Russo. What's a cheap shot? Pointing out that his bullshit lines about bringing up ratings and all this crap, by bringing up the numbers and pointing out that he's wrong, that's taking a cheap shot? No! That is pointing out truth. I never come on here and lie. I never come on here and say, man, last pay-per-view Vince Russo booked did 1,000 buys. Never. I honestly tell you what I really believe and what I know about TNA business and Vince Russo's effect on it. And all of these numbers, I mean, all of the ratings and everything like that, you can look all that shit up. Buy rates are a little bit harder, but the ratings, you can go look all that shit up. You can go through his book. He's got all this bullshit about how he went to WCW and the ratings went sky high and all this stuff. Death of WCW has all the numbers, and if you don't believe him in that book, you can go back and look online or look in the Observers or look wherever, and you can back up all those numbers. They're all real numbers. I just got so pissed off reading this, hearing this guy cry and bitch and just moan about, oh, everybody takes cheap shots at me. Everybody's so mean to Vince Russo. They don't know what kind of guy I am. It doesn't fucking matter what kind of guy you are. Look at Vince McMahon. Shit that guy's done in his life.
He's a dick.
Does it fucking matter what kind of person he is? No! We never talk about that. I mean, we may bring up things like, man.
He does own a yacht called the Sexy Bitch.
Yeah, but what the fuck does that have to do with whether WrestleMania is going to do a million buys?
Well, nothing.
I'm here talking about the business. I don't give a fuck what Vince McMahon is doing on his private time unless it adversely affects his business. What a crybaby.
It was very
whiny. What a melodramatic crybaby.
And it is amazing that the business was so cruel and took all that time away from his family, and it caused him to get the attention of the...
So quit!
Yes. The cruel, hardworking critics, and it broke his heart so much, he stayed in the industry for another decade.
He's still there now!
Yes. Decade can't counting.
I mean, if you want me to take cheap shots at him as a person, I could ask the question, well, if this is so hard on your fucking family... Why the fuck are you still doing this job? Answer that for me!
Honestly,
man, I got a family, and they're miserable. I never devote enough time to them. They hate this business. I hate this business. But goddamn it, I'm going to keep doing it. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Just melodramatic bullshit. Pissed me off. So there you go. There's my thoughts on Vince Russo's crying, pandering, pathetic attempt at getting sympathy here in his fucking book. Just disgust me.
We actually talk a lot more about it, really, because...
I don't want to. You have something to say? Go for it.
Well, you mentioned on the show like a month ago, it would be in your best interest for Vince Russo to succeed.
Yeah.
And it always has been.
Yeah, why would I want Vince Russo to fail? Why would I want anybody in this business to fail? It would be best if everybody succeeded.
Yes.
It would be best if everybody made money. And I'd make money. Everybody would be happy.
Sure.
Fans would be happy. I mean, hey, think about this. Think about this. I realize that people love the Impact when we rant and rave about Impact. But you realize that we do have a fair number of people that every now and then they'll go on the forum and say, man, I'm bored of the same old reviews. I'm bored of the same old stuff.
Right.
Like, it's our fault that the stuff we're reviewing is the same old shit. At least it's changed a little bit. But if you look back 8-9 months, there was a period where everything was extraordinarily stagnant. People seem to have forgotten that because WWE has been so great building up WrestleMania. But you go back like 9 months, this fucking company, the same guys in the main event on every show, having the same matches, it was the same boring program every week, and we had to review it, which in turn was boring because we're repeating the same stuff we repeat every week about the same guys, and people got on us about it.
Right.
That actually always pissed me off. It's my fault that Randy Orton and John Cena are having their 9th consecutive match.
Yes.
How in God's name is that my fault? I want that to change more than anybody. So, again, if wrestling is successful, the fans are happy, I'm happy, I make a little bit of money, the fans get to hear something different on the radio shows.
More wrestlers have jobs.
More wrestlers have jobs, everybody benefits. Why would I want to skewer anybody? Now, I'm happy skewing Vince Russo because for 8 fucking years, it's been the same failure. Never learning from any mistakes. Just the same failures, one right after the other. Time to get rid of the guy. Time to hang that guy out to dry. Now, when we get into the Impact report here tonight, I realize that I yesterday even today looking back, it was a better show.
Yes.
This was a much better show.
It is ironic. This Russo Rand is coming on a vastly improved Impact.
But you can go back in history, and there have been good Impacts. It's not like every Impact in the history of the world was bad, Monday night.
This is not the first good Impact ever.
No. This was a good Impact. This Impact was greatly improved over the week prior. Thumbs up to this Impact. Now, if you go back through the archives, there are many Impacts that we gave thumbs up or 2 thumbs up to. Ultimately, it always goes back to the same old shit. Maybe this time it'll be different. We'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt. But when you look at the spoilers for next week, they do not look promising.
Why do you do that?
People bring it to my attention.
I see.
The spoilers for next week don't look promising. Now, we'll wait and see. Maybe next week's show is going to be great. On paper, it does not look promising. We shall see. So, with all that said, we're going to review this Impact here today. We're going to hope that things have improved. Maybe Vince Russo, after all these years, finally figured it out. That Crash TV doesn't work in 2010. And now there's going to be a change. We're going to go back to some more logical booking. We'll build up some fucking pay-per-views.
It'll be long-term planning.
Actually try to make some money. Long-term planning. Vince Russo used to do long-term planning.
Mm.
But long-term planning only works when you've got a clue. If you don't have a clue about wrestling, long-term planning means jack shit. Because you're building up to stupid shit.
Right.
It's still stupid shit whether you build up to it over the course of a week or 6 months. It's still bad shit. I just want good shit. I don't care if you book week to week. I don't care if you book backwards 8 months. I just want good shit. This Impact was good, so we're going to talk about it here, and we'll see what happens next week. So, I've wasted a lot of time here ranting, so let's start on Impact. You go ahead and start.
Well, as we sit here talking about how this is a good Impact and how happy we're with it, it started off on a dour note. Eric Bischoff was in the ring allegedly playing guitar. It was very obviously not Eric Bischoff playing guitar. They would show a man's fingers playing and then show Eric closing his eyes and rocking his head back as if he was feeling the groove. You never actually saw Eric Bischoff playing guitar. It was a worked concert.
You know what's funny? I almost believe it was real. I realize that we never actually saw a shot of Eric Bischoff, like his whole body playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
We only saw close-ups of his hands without a face, and we only saw close-ups of a face without a hand. And I, too, assume this had to have been bullshit.
But however, it is possible.
This was a live show.
Yes.
And the fingers playing the guitar were on cue. And I just find it a little hard to believe that TNA didn't fuck this up.
It is possible that Eric Bischoff is, in fact, a very talented musician. In which case, it's the crack technical team's fault for shooting this in such a way as to make me think it was fake.
Yes. Regardless.
Whether it was fake or not, that was the impression I got watching this live. That I got the impression I was being fed a load of bull. And not even the typical bullshit they associate with wrestling. Because I was supposed to take this seriously. So anyway, he plays a fucking concert. This went on forever. Eric Bischoff alone in a spotlight playing his guitar. Then he explained that there were a lot of things people didn't know about him, such as that he was a classically trained musician. And then he explained that is why he hates Jeff Jarrett. Because Jeff Jarrett takes guitars and bonks people with them. Because he's a phony. So he challenged Jeff to come out and play. This is the best explanation they can have for why Bischoff has been fucking with Jarrett for a few months.
Yeah.
So Jarrett came out. Couldn't play, couldn't sing, couldn't dance. I would have loved to see him dance, actually. Bischoff called him a phony, said, for some reason, he doesn't want to fire him.
I couldn't figure this out
either. I still don't understand why. He challenged Jeff to hit him with a guitar, and Jeff teased it, and then finally thought better of it and refused. And this disappointed Eric. So he started calling Jeff a coward and whatnot. Started saying this is what your daughters are going to think of you. Taking cheap shots at his family, in fact. And so Jarrett returned, and Bischoff had his back turned and was ranting about whatever. And he turned around, and Jarrett bonked him with a guitar. And this was the best prop guitar ever. Because it made a very loud noise to the point where I was actually concerned for Bischoff's safety. Until they showed a million replays, and you see his head does not move. The guitar shatters all around him, and then he sells, and he's fine. But I was terrified of this impact, and that was that. So Eric got what he wanted. Jeff hit him with a guitar. Jeff went backstage. Mick Foley was there saying, boy, I bet that felt good. They hugged. They went to commercial, and they came back, and Eric was still in the ring. He got to his feet and started talking, and he was angry but unhurt from this crippling guitar shot. So that's how devastating it was. It knocked him cold for 5 minutes, and he was just magically better. So even though Jeff had done what Eric wanted him to do, and even though Eric hates Jeff, he still refused to fire him, saying instead he would book Jarrett versus Foley with the winner getting fired in about an hour. Or excuse me, the loser getting fired, or the winner, however you look at it. With the loser being fired in about an hour, and then he said, the winner will be my bitch. And they cut backstage. Foley and Jeff were watching on a monitor. Mick Foley said, that was a short-lived celebration. And they went back and forth for a while, and finally Foley says, this is a fight neither one of us can win. And he stormed off. This was the most sitcom-ish moment in their history. This segment needed a laugh track all the way through.
And I didn't mention these things yesterday, but I did have some nitpicking with this segment when you read it back here again. A couple of things. First off, the whole why won't Eric Bischoff just fire Jeff Jarrett is a question that needs to be answered. Why doesn't he just fire the guy?
I have no fucking idea.
Because, all right, let's do an analogy with me and you. Let's say that I want to fire you.
Hypothetically.
Now, I'm in charge.
That's true.
I do not have to answer to anybody. Mm-hmm. I can just fire you.
Right.
So, if I have that power, and I don't need an excuse, and I want to fire you, why would I beg you to hit me so then I can fire you? You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know.
Why wouldn't I just fire you? Why would I willingly accept being punched in the face to fire you when I could just fire you? That baffled me. And the second thing, and the people popped big for Jarrett afterwards, so it's not a big deal, but there was just something about Eric Bischoff supposedly playing the guitar masterfully. He calls out Jeff Jarrett, whose gimmick, I guess, is, I don't know what his gimmick is, but he brings a guitar with him and he's from Nashville. You call out Jeff Jarrett, the babyface. You dare him to play the guitar or sing or dance, and he does none of it, you really did make the guy look like a coward.
Yeah.
and he really did expose him as a phony.
And then he did tease sitting with the guitar and refused to do it basically until Eric had his back turned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
The segment, I give the segment a thumbs in the middle. It was fine. It set up shit for later on in the show. But as usual, there were things in the segment that made no sense.
I thought
because there always will be with Vince Russo working there.
I cannot give this a thumbs in the middle. I thought this was a thumbs down. And we'll talk about the stupidity of this, but it led to a loser leaves town match with an hour's build that accomplished nothing.
Well, that was stupid.
And
you can't win them all.
Yeah. Frankly, I saw nothing positive in this segment, really. I guess Bischoff's promo, he is a good performer. But it did nothing. It literally did nothing for me. Speaking of doing nothing for me, Beautiful People and Daphne versus Tara and Angelina and Taylor and Sarita. They plugged during this match and actually several times throughout the show that this would be the only chance you have to watch Impact this week.
Mm-hmm.
There would be no Thursday replay. I thought about this. So there's basically what they're thinking is that there's two sets of Impact fans. Those who watch Monday and those who watch Thursday. So they're telling this message to the people who are watching on Monday, you won't be able to watch this show for a second time on Thursday. So they probably thought, great. And then you're telling the people, I guess, who usually watch it Thursday, you're screwed. Only it's Monday, so they're not watching anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't see what this accomplished at all.
I liked how last week, all the guys went on Twitter, including Dixie Carter, and were begging people to DVR the show.
On Thursday?
No, on Monday.
On Monday.
Why would you do that? Shouldn't you tell them to DVR Raw?
I would think so. So they had this match. It was what it was. There was the heat was supposed to be Tara running the ropes, and Daphne would grab her hair, only I think Daphne forgot. And so time froze with Tara just hanging on the ropes, and Daphne finally hit her. Mike Tenay plugged an upcoming UFC show, and just hearing that him plug that show on Impact was so bizarre.
What's bizarre is they were airing two of the prelims from the UFC on Versus show, and they plugged that episode of Unleashed harder than they have plugged any of their own shows or pay-per-views probably in history.
That is probably true.
Fascinating.
That is probably true. So they went with the finish. The finish was the parade of finishers, where every girl hits a big move, does a pose, and then turns around and there's someone else to clobber her. And it ended with Daphne cutting off Tara and pinning her with a wacky spinning move. And by the end, the crowd was into this, and so I cannot call this a failure, but it was not particularly good.
No.
AJ and Flair arrived. They are the Two Stooges. They were in cartoonish wheelchair and casts and bandages and sniping at each other so we would laugh at them. 30 minutes into the show, we got a pay-per-view recap, which I guess, hey, if you think there are people who are tuning in because you assume your audience did not buy the pay-per-view, so you want to use the pay-per-view recap as a tease or a draw, bury it in the middle of the show, make them watch the first half hour anyway, so I guess I get that. Abyss and Hogan came out. Hogan said Bischoff was right, that Flair can hit his Hogan's buttons. He vowed to the fans and Dixie that he could get the company back on track, and it was only business starting at lockdown.
I just love the constant references to, we're here to get Impact back on track. Because God knows, it's so off track, well, it's fans. We've done such a bad job, now we need to fix it.
It would be one thing if this was his first show, but he has now been there for 2.5 months.
Or maybe if there was some sort of great storyline that pushed the company supposedly off track. You know, you bring in a GM who runs roughshod or something like that. No.
It just sucks.
TNA sucks, so they need to fix it. That's what they're telling their audience every time they do this.
So he had a big announcement they were teasing, and the big announcement was that Abyss was going to be team captain of Team Hogan at Lethal Lockdown. So he gave the mic to Abyss, who cut this awesome promo about how he did not win the title the night before, but he won his own respect. And he talked about feeling the power of the ring and putting AJ through whatever part of the set he saw fit. So he was awesome here.
I did like, by the way, I just realized this. I don't think there was any period during the show where Hulk Hogan explained why He had handed the title to Abyss, but Earl Hebner gave it back to AJ.
No, never addressed.
And why Hogan didn't just put the belt on AJ or something. Or on Abyss. I don't know.
No, there was no explanation.
You would have liked some sort of explanation.
There was no explanation of what did happen, nor what should have happened, nor what people wanted to happen. It was just left. So, AJ and Flair came out. Flair said that he was the pissed off one. He said St. Louis was Flair country and that he is a cage match specialist. And that terrified me because I thought that meant Flair would be wrestling in the match, which I guess he still might be. But he announced that his captain would be Sting. The lights went out. You know, we went to that SmackDown taping 2 weeks ago, and The Undertaker did a lights-out appearance, and we talked about how I didn't notice them sneaking Undertaker down under the ring, but what we didn't talk about was how the lights went out. They were out for maybe 4 seconds, and when they came back on, Taker had already scrambled up into the ring and struck a pose, yep. And he's a pro. He's been doing this for a long time, and he knows how to do it. But I, even there live, knowing what had happened, I was still impressed with just how fast it all came together. These lights were off for a long time. And to be fair, there was more than just one guy climbing in the ring. When the lights came back on, AJ was in the ring, Sting was in the ring, and Hulk Hogan had magically been handcuffed to the ropes. Mm-hmm. So AJ laid out Abyss with his crutch. Sting just left. Mm-hmm. I guess he was there to be the electrician, to take care of the lighting. So AJ's taking out Abyss, working him over. Crowd chants for RVD. They get the Pope. He came out, ran wild on AJ in a fine display. The babyfaces all beat him up, and then the Pope saved Hulk Hogan. I don't know if this means anything, but it's still just funny to say and think about. The Pope saved Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
So,
there's nothing wrong with this segment.
It should have been stretched out over several shows.
Yeah, it drives me crazy when you do an angle and heels do something dastardly to the baby faces, but then in the exact same segment, the baby faces just make their own comeback and send the heels packing, which begs the question, well, why did the heels do anything in the first place?
We have been talking about how Edge and Jericho have been continuously in their feud right back where they were a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They're right back where they were 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So
why couldn't it should have been Hogan gets handcuffed. They beat the shit out of the baby faces. That's it.
That's it.
Next week, maybe the baby faces get their revenge. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe the heels keep beating them up until it's time for you to pay to see the baby faces get their revenge at the fucking pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I realize that's asking too much in 2010.
Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam showed up and their little buddy Shannon Moore. They said they were there to have fun at somebody else's expense and to show off Jeff's new shirt.
Well, they are there to have fun at someone else's expense. That is undoubtedly true. That is the truest statement I've ever heard on Impact. We are here to have fun at someone else's expense.
Yes.
True!
True. Oh, Big Rob Terry squashed Tomko. Nothing else to say.
Tomko, who got a title shot, mind you. He got a shot at the global championship.
Sure.
And why not?
What are the qualifications now? Give it to anyone. Who cares?
Who's got the largest gut on the roster? You're getting a title shot tonight.
Scott Hall.
Tomko! Yeah. Tomko's fatter than Scott Hall.
He probably is. So we had a recap of Mick Foley shaving Eric. There was a Mick Foley, Jeff Jarrett highlight video that I was skimming through commercials and I saw, wait, there's a video package. I should go back and watch this. And I watched about 10 seconds and realized, wait, I don't care. So I skipped ahead again. Foley and Jarrett were doing a promo. Foley said that he had been thinking of driving Eric Bischoff out of TNA. And Jarrett said they both deserve to stay there. And Foley said they owed it to each other to show how much the company meant to them by driving one of them out somehow.
I don't know.
The point of all this, when it all ended, they were hunky-dory and at peace with the fact that the loser of their match was going to be fired. And they agreed to go out and have a good competitive sportsmanship, an athletic contest with a loser being fired, and they didn't care.
Yeah.
There was no, I will do anything to keep my job. There was no, I love Jeff, but if I have to kill him, I will. No, they were just, loser goes home. And I just said, if they don't care, why should I?
Well, maybe the storyline is this is realism, and they both know that the loser is going to be back in 3 weeks anyway.
That's the other thing. There's that possibility, too. So we had Jarrett versus Foley.
Beer money as referees. And why not, I often ask. And why not?
I mean, why not is the key question, Impact. But
I know the answer would be, well, it plays into the storyline.
In what way, though?
I don't know, but
they,
it does.
They hate both guys. They interfered one time for the guy who ended up winning anyway.
Because playing into the storyline means something similar has happened in recent weeks. Like, for whatever reason, Beer Money was like a referee, or... Wait, what was it? It was... Jarrett was a referee for Beer Money versus Foley. There's no explanation for how Beer Money plays in any of this, but
no.
It's part of the story, you see. That's why it supposedly makes sense,
honestly,
even though
I don't
doesn't.
See, but okay.
Well, that's the point.
Well, the point here is, the highlight of this match was the silent crowd reading, "Where is Samoa Joe?" A great question. He has been disappeared. If I did not work for this site, if I did not read The Observer and your newsletter, I would assume that in real life, Samoa Joe had been fired. He has disappeared.
Yes.
He was kidnapped. They mentioned it for 2 or 3 weeks. Now he's gone from the program in every way. So they wrestled for a long time. I couldn't get into it because, like I said, because the guys didn't seem to care about being fired and because I assume both will be back within a month. But Jarrett won. The crowd was so heartbroken and distraught and upset at Mick Foley being fired, they sang the goodbye song. Our beloved cuddly Mick Foley's gone. So Foley and Jarrett had a heartfelt farewell.
Actually, I loved the finish. I want to talk about the finish here very quickly.
Fair. Go ahead. Have it.
So Foley hits a double arm DDT onto a chair. Jarrett puts his foot on the ropes. Foley produces the sock, which Mike Tenay referred to as Mr. Socko. I didn't think they could say that, but apparently they can. So Foley gives him the Socko claw. Jarrett reaches for the ropes. Robert Roode kicks his hand off. I thought, this must be the finish. Foley then puts him in a body scissors with the Socko claw. There is seemingly no escape for Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett then proceeds to elbow his way free, give Foley one boot in the corner, and then give him a stroke onto a chair for the pin. Complete burial of Mick Foley.
Yes.
He took his finisher. He took his finisher with a body scissors. He no-sold his finisher. He fought his way out of his finisher. And then literally 10 seconds later, he hit his own finisher on the guy and pinned him.
Yes. And
wow.
Yeah.
Who put this match together? Vince.
Jeff, apparently.
Jeff Jarrett and Mick Foley? This was the best finish these two fucking guys could come up with? No one cares.
No, that is the key. No one cares.
These guys don't
and
care.
And I ask again, you know, if Robert Roode was so, you know, if he wanted Jeff Jarrett to lose, he kicked his hand off the ropes, why didn't Beer Money just beat him up and let Mick pin him? Don't know. Why not? So.
Why didn't he just rule, double DQ, you're both fired?
That's actually a great question. We can at least accept the possibility that perhaps James Storm was drunk.
I long since gave up on this heel ref bullshit.
Yes, so. Then Eric Bischoff decided that even though Mick Foley was fired, he was not satisfied. He ordered Beer Money to attack Jarrett. They did so with gusto. And then came, I think, my favorite moment in the entire show. They started playing Jeff Hardy's music. And Bischoff was so clueless, he started shucking and jiving to it.
Yeah. Bischoff was doing commentary for the whole thing.
Yeah, he was, and they cut to him, and he's smiling, and his shoulders are bobbing. And the next thing you know, Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam are in the ring whipping ass, and he's outraged.
Yeah.
That was funny for several reasons. So they clear the ring. RVD cut a promo. He wanted to know which was beer and which was money. At which point, James Storm clarified by pointing at himself and screaming, "I'm beer!" Which was my second favorite moment of the show. Long story short, he challenged them to a match and they accepted. So RVD has been demoted. At the time, I wrote further demoted from Hogan's little buddy to Jeff's little buddy. Although by the end of the show, that was irrelevant. So never mind.
I liked how this show told the story that Eric Bischoff has all this power. He signed a Flair or a Foley Jarrett match where the loser has to leave TNA forever. All this stuff. And anyway, Jeff and RVD come out and he acts completely helpless. My God, what's happening?
Yeah.
Who okayed this?
Yes.
How dare this happen?
Well, yeah, that's.
You cannot just stand up and say, no, this match will not take place. Security, get these two dipshits out of the building.
This has been a TNA thing for years. There are always multiple people in charge and. They could always pull rank on each other for whatever is convenient, for whatever story they want to tell at that moment.
Sure.
So this is just more of the same. So Foley said goodbye to everyone backstage. The knockouts came up to say hi, and he warned them, don't hug me, my wife's watching. Then Bubba the Love Sponge was there to interview him.
Comedy as he leaves.
Yeah, well, to be honest, that's how Foley would say if he was actually being fired. I was fine with that. Bubba the Love Sponge asked him for a word. Foley said this is not the time, and even if it was the time, there's a lot of men I would rather talk to before you. So Bubba said, well, get lost, old timer. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And so Foley turned around and grabbed him by the collar and shouted at him for a bit and then punched him right in the damn face.
Yeah.
That looked like it sucked.
Yeah.
I marked out for this harder than I did for any punch on the UFC show. This was a louder reaction for me than John Bone Jones breaking that dude's face. He hit him hard. So that was that. It was funny because as soon as Bubba appeared, despite these signs you see in the crowd, most of them hate Bubba.
Yeah.
So as soon as he appeared, massive boos. And then when Foley socked him, huge ovation.
Yeah.
He may be the best heel in the company. Bischoff met with Hulk. Hulk was a little upset. Said Foley could have been an asset. Now he's gone. He said he understands how things can get personal, just like he got tied up with Sting, but that was in the past. I saw Sting put you in handcuffs an hour ago.
Yeah.
It's not really in the past.
Well, it is.
I guess it's an hour ago. It's the very recent past. And then he asked Eric to please leave Jarrett alone because, and I quote, Jarrett's getting over with the fans.
Yeah. But Foley apparently was not.
I guess not. So that was that.
I just liked how he's like, we could have done something with that guy, but now he's gone. And then he just moved on.
It was not
that. It's like he was concerned for a moment, but then was like, ah, who gives
life
a
goes fuck? On.
Life goes on.
Gotta face the future. Christy interviewed Beer Money. They cut a good promo, basically saying that they had realized it was time to put themselves first and they were going to win the main event. Borash interviewed RVD and Hardy, and they basically said they too were going to win the main event. Not much to it. Morgan versus Hernandez. Hernandez beat the fuck out of Matt Morgan for a while, just destroyed this giant man. Crowd was totally into it, and then Morgan cut him off and immediately placed his head against the ring post and hit the carbon footprint into the post. They played this off like a giant injury angle.
Trauma, Taz said.
Taz would suggest the possibility of brain trauma. Morgan hit this footprint and Hernandez tumbled to the floor, not moving. And Morgan rolled into the ring and then whispered to the ref, like, I think I killed him. And the ref went outside and held up the big X. And they came down and they took care of him. And they had, as they noted, his best friend Homicide there. Not noting that the last time we saw these men on TV, they were trying to kill each other.
Bitter blood feud.
Bitter blood feud. So it was...
I just love this idea of, let's try to make this one look real. Well, what about the rest of the shit on the show?
Yeah.
All fake?
We want to tell the crowd, and this is another classic Vince Russo move, everything else you've seen on the show is fake, but this is real.
Sure.
So...
Which is funny, because still no one believed it.
Yeah. So, well, they did not get the goodbye song, at least. But it was a big deal. They went through many segments of just tending to him and carting him back to the backstage and getting him on an ambulance. And Hogan said, telling someone to call his wife because she was not watching.
I was going to say, she had the DVR on.
So it was no one believed it anyway. And I don't know if you could really make them believe it. But if anything, and this is going to sound perhaps retarded, if anything, they did too good a job of faking it. Because from Morgan whispering to the ref, I just killed him, to the ref running out and turning right to the camera holding up the big X sign, everything just came off too perfectly realistic.
Yeah.
So, but it was not terrible. I mean, they established that, you know, they're still tag champs, and Morgan has taken Hernandez out. Hernandez will be out for who knows how long, and then we'll come back and get revenge. And this is a simple story that's been told a million times in wrestling. It usually works great. So, huzzah. This is also a nitpick. They cut to the announcers for the wrap up, I guess, the injury angle and the segue back to more wrestling. And Taz was flustered, didn't know what to say. He uttered his unfortunate line about brain trauma, but Taz was actually believable. And then Mike Tenay started to speak, and it's really not his fault, but everything Mike Tenay says sounds like a sales pitch. It's just the way he is and the way he talks. He is a Vegas showman. So as everything he sounds, whatever he says, it sounds like a giant shill. So we got a...
So what'd he say?
Oh, just that...
Back to action!
Essentially, yes. So, man, we're very concerned about the head injury of Hernandez. Back to action. Got a video recap of the band getting back together. Beer Money versus Rob Van Dam and Jeff Hardy. This match ruled. This is my favorite TV match in a long time on any show, at least as far back as that Rey Mysterio-Luke Gallows match, the first one for about a month ago. Heat on Jeff for a long time. Jeff is an awesome face in peril. Hot tag to Rob Van Dam. Rob Van Dam makes an awesome comeback. Did a bunch of stuff at the finish, and then the finish was both baby faces hitting all their cool moves, the senton and the frog, 5-star frog splash for the pin. Baby faces won. This was just great. I loved this match. Caught you off guard there, didn't I?
I thought you'd keep going.
Yes.
It was a great match, yes.
Yes. So they also, the other remarkable thing that happened here, they plugged matches for next week.
Yeah, they did.
The first, during the match, they plugged Tara versus Daphne, first blood.
Now,
we'll get to that in a second. we'll talk about that. Can we talk about that first? This is a match no one on earth could possibly want to see. Two bad wrestlers who have had many bad matches. Now they're going to make us. I guess they were supposed to be excited by the possibility of watching a woman bleed. No, thank you. But I didn't even care. I didn't care that I have zero desire to see this match. I was so happy they were just plugging anything for next week that I just cheered. I threw my arms in the air and I cheered. So the match finally ends, and RVD and Jeff are celebrating. Eric Young hits the ring and basically announces that next week it will be himself, RVD, and Jeff versus Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Sean Waltman, which I have hardly any more desire to see, although it at least has bigger stars. But hey, they're promoting next week. Woohoo!
Yes.
It's an episodic feel to this.
Eric Young, one man does not fit in this match. Eric Young is just not doing it for me lately.
He is certainly the low man on the totem pole there.
I was a huge fan of Eric Young for a long time until they killed him.
They have killed him deeply
all
dead.
All that Super Eric bullshit, and so then all of a sudden he's a bad
man. Then he's the world
man.
Elite geek, and then he's Kevin Nash's little buddy, and then he got punked out there. And we're not supposed to buy him as he's wearing a leather jacket all the time. He buzzed his head.
Yeah, wasn't he hated a while ago? Didn't he hate America?
Yes.
And was an evil, dastardly heel?
Yeah.
And then he got fucked over his own stupidity. Now we're supposed to cheer him?
Yeah. So
not working for me.
That is dumb. So I hated the first half of the show more than you, but I really like the second half of Impact.
Let's play a song. I'm gonna beat you so bad, I'm gonna call you my honey. Oh! I'm gonna beat you so bad, you'll know why I'm money. Oh! Time and time again, I gotta turn back around and tell these hoes that I am HNIC. Bitch, that's just the way it goes. I be on that shit. That'll have you on that I don't want no mo. This time, I need all my free clothes to get down on the floor. What you say? That you only meant well, cause you did. What you say? That it's all for the best, because it is. What you say? Oh, Clint's is on a roll of late.
That is a tremendous one.
I'm going to tackle Raw here since you're killing me with your length of your reviews here. And there ain't much to say about Raw. Final go-home show before WrestleMania. They kept it simple. Open with the Shawn Michaels deal coming out, talking about how he was the man. He was feeling it. He was going to kick The Undertaker's ass, this, that, and the other thing, and the streak. So lights end up going out, and they played a video of Shawn. It ended with a shot of him laying there dead with a Shawn's career 1985 to 2010 graphic. Yeah, and he said, listen, if you're going to try and intimidate me, you should come out here and do it to my face. That video ain't going to work. So out comes Pete Rose. Segment died. Christ almighty, whose idea was this? Shawn just had this look on his face like, This is like my last Raw for a long fucking time. This is my last in-ring interview for a long fucking time. And history is going to record that Pete Rose concluded it. So Pete came out. He sucked. People let him know it. He announced it was going to be Shawn versus Kane so that he could get his revenge on Kane. And he noted that it was the same stipulations as WrestleMania. Not saying what they were, which led me to think that Shawn was going to have to retire if he lost to Kane. Or if Kane lost, Undertaker's WrestleMania streak would end. Luckily, Michael Cole, of all fucking people, saved this by alerting this has meant no DQ, no countout. This was fine, but man, Pete Rose.
His first half of
Jesus.
Shawn's promo was awesome, particularly when he said, I feel like I did when I threw Marty through the window and beat Brett for the title and kicked Taker's teeth down his throat. And I thought, so you feel like kind of a dick? He said, I feel like I can do anything. So basically, yeah. And then, yes, Pete Rose came out. I believe it is safe to say pretty much unanimously, Pete Rose, worst Raw guest host ever. I don't think it's close.
Clips of Dave and Cena with Dave breaking his neck. We had Miz and Morrison with the Big Show doing commentary. Close second for match of the night. This was a really good TV match.
Actually, it was, yes.
Worked very well together. Show was funny on commentary. Truth existed. That's maybe even giving it too much credit.
I would debate that point, frankly.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of embarrassing how badly Show was schooling him on the commentary. Especially when, what would Truth say? Truth claimed that Miz and Show were not partners. They were on separate pages, whereas he and Morrison were a team. You guys won the title shot in your first match ever as a team.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a poor argument.
And they're the tag team champions.
Indeed.
You're fighting. So Morrison won. Big Show got upset, shoved down Truth. Morrison dropkicked Show. Babyfaces bailed. It was Babyfaces winning to set up a tag title shot at the pay-per-view. What's there to say about it?
This is
how it should be done.
They have done everything they can. They threw together a team to face the tag team champions at Mania. It was clearly an afterthought. They have realized this, and pretty much every segment on almost every show has been devoted to making sure people think the babyfaces have a shot.
It's not sexy.
No.
When you watch this show, it's very by the numbers. If you don't like that, then watch Impact. But
you get surprises and swerves.
These people have a goal of making a lot of money.
And they're going to make
so fucking much money on Sunday that they don't give a fuck if you find the show boring. They're doing what needs to be done to make money.
Yes.
Swagger did commentary for the next match, which was, we missed the Orton-Hunter thing backstage.
Hunter and Orton had a meeting. They don't like each other.
Anyway, it was Kofi Kingston versus Kozlov, Money in the Bank. Poor Swagger did not want to wrestle Kozlov. He made that very clear.
Yeah, see, he was asked which of these guys you want to see in Money in the Bank, and he replied, I do not want any part of Vladimir. Nothing.
Yes.
Now, we talked about how Show schooled Truth on commentary. Had Truth been out there for this segment, I believe he would have schooled Swagger.
Yeah.
He was atrocious, particularly when he said, there is only one all-American-American, I mean. And that was the end. Later, as Kozlov was hitting Kofi, King asked Swagger to explain how hard these shots were. And Swagger replied, can't explain it. Can't explain it. Awkward pause. So in the ring,
Kofi won.
In the ring, Vladimir Kozlov beat the shit out of Kofi for a while and looked awesome doing it. And then Kofi hit like one cutoff move and his kick in one. Wrong man won.
I wasn't even paying attention, really.
Yeah. And then the final note, the last thing Swagger said on commentary after the match says, you know, after I win Money in the Bank, I might just cash it in that night. Subtly putting the seed in everyone's head, that's right, the Money in the Bank winner can cash it in at Mania.
Legacy came out, Cody cut a promo, said after 18 months he was finally free of Orton. They basically babbled back and forth and planted the seeds that they don't like each other, but I just don't care at all about
this
feud.
No one could possibly care.
I mean, I cannot imagine a human being on this planet wanting to see this three-way. No one.
No.
Even Sinbad, who's like the biggest fan ever of Cody Rhodes. Sinbad, you can't really want to see this match.
No.
I mean, really.
The highlight of this to me was the sign in the crowd reading, Sign Joey Ryan. Good luck to you. It's good to have goals.
We had
Sheamus. He's been on. Big Show killed him once.
Yeah.
Yes, so he's been on.
Sheamus and Legacy against Orton and Triple H. I don't understand the finish. Sheamus pinned Orton.
Yeah.
Why? I have absolutely no idea. I have absolutely no idea. Someone had to pin someone, I guess.
Yeah. Honestly, that's the biggest thing. They didn't want to give, I guess, even the potential finish for a Mania match away, so they just had the heels win and pick names at random. Now, we talked about this, but you know, this show did a low rating. Probably doesn't matter in the long run. I think they figured whoever wins this match doesn't matter in the long run. So, fuck it. Have Sheamus been Orton.
And then Triple H beat up Sheamus and sent him packing. So, presumably, Sheamus wins at WrestleMania.
You would think.
Otherwise...
you would think.
They've gone back and forth every week. To the point that no one could possibly care about that match either. At least the main event matches they've done a good job with. Because there's some matches on the undercard that... baffling. But it's WrestleMania. There's always undercard matches that don't make sense. Bret Hart did his promo. It was a fine promo. It wasn't great or anything like that. He did a good job talking about... he's going to Mania. All of his family's going to be there. Vince better watch out. His sisters might kick his ass.
The best line was when he said... he noted that Vince had called his family dysfunctional derelicts and then offered no retort.
No.
No defense. No rebuttal. He just said yes, and they're coming to get you.
He said yes, there will be dysfunctional derelicts all around Phoenix.
Yes.
And boy, is that a true statement.
Yes, and some of them will be in the Hart family. Yes, and he said for 12 years he had heard Brett screwed Brett. After Mania, all your hero is going to be Brett beat Vince. Fans chanted that. It was a good promo. It did go on way too long. He basically said, I'm going to win in 1,000 different ways.
And then Vince came out, and he had one thing to say, and that was, on Sunday, one way or another, you're screwed. What does that mean?
No one knows.
I don't know, but it was a good little deal right there. So, Pete Rose with Sean Luck. We had Sean versus Kane. No count out, no DQ. Last match on Raw for Shawn Michaels.
He's had
a long
better.
Time. Kind of made me sad. Of all the people. It was not horrible. I've seen Kane have much worse matches. The story it told was good, though, that Shawn was about to do the super kick, but the lights went out. When they came back on, Undertaker and replaced Kane. He chokeslammed Shawn. Lights went back out. Came back on. Kane was in the ring. He went to make the cover. Shawn kicked out of the chokeslam.
Yes.
And then hit the super kick for the pin.
Yes.
To prove... it could be done.
To prove he can kick out of the chokeslam.
Miracles can fucking happen.
It was during this match that the gravity of this situation really hit me. And this is going to be... Shawn Michaels is going to be gone from Raw for minimum a long time.
Yeah.
And I buy Shawn Michaels' threatening retirement much more than I do Mick Foley's being fired on Impact.
Yeah.
And just thinking about... we thought he was retired after his match with Austin at Mania 15... and then, through the grace of God, we got 7+ more years.
Yeah.
Thank you, God. Thank you for that.
All perhaps coming to an end on Sunday. I have a theory that Shawn wants so badly to be able to retire that he's agreed to this storyline with the idea that he'll come back and he's got no desire to.
It's entirely possible.
But you know how things happen.
Things do happen. And,
his kids will be teenagers soon enough, down there in Texas, drinking and shooting guns. He'll be begging to come back.
Drinking and shooting guns.
The fuck else do you do down there?
I've heard those two do go together sometimes.
Bob Uecker's going to the Hall of Fame. We had a deal where Kane attacked Pete Rose.
This is the only other Pete Rose segment on the show. That should tell you how much he sucks. They kept him off TV for virtually the entire program. He made a joke about having more championship rings than the San Francisco Giants because they were in San Jose. And then he laughed at them, or he made fun of them, because 20 years ago or so, there was an earthquake that killed people, and then they also failed to win the World Series that year. This. Wow.
Well.
What can you do, I guess? And then we got to see him acting as Kane dragged him into the room, and he said... oh my God, Kane, no! And then the door closed and we heard sounds of violence inside.
Eve, Gail, Beth with Kelly and Mickey against Layla, Michelle, and Maryse with Alicia and her pants and Vicky. It went 30 seconds. The only two girls that got in the ring were Gail and Michelle. Theoretically, the two best workers of the six. They had a god-awful match. Michelle won. No one else made a tag. This fucking sucked.
I was too distracted by the commentary because, as Michael Cole noted, Vicky Guerrero was wearing a necklace that read Cougar. And then he said, "Hey, King, you like cougars?" And Lawler wasn't really paying attention, so Cole pointed it out.
I think he was talking about Mickey, not Vicky.
Vicky Guerrero was wearing a necklace that said Cougar. That is a fact.
Wouldn't she, not that I think that she is, but wouldn't she be a MILF?
That's
she has children.
Virtually what a cougar is.
No, the cougar has no children.
Well, you're more up on your...
So I've heard.
You're older.
I'm sure if anybody could correct
terminology
us,
than I am.
The board would be able to do it.
But the point here is, what's really... The real comedy came when Cole said, "Hey, King, you like cougars." And about 5 seconds passed, and Cole could not keep up this illusion anymore. He said, "No, that's not true. That's totally ridiculous. I'm sorry for even suggesting it." That was funny. What happened to the match? Don't care.
We had the main event segment with Dave and Cena. I'll let you describe this one.
Well, Dave came out. His douchey outfit in the go-home show for WrestleMania was some faded ripped jeans and a tight wife beater and sunglasses. I was disappointed. Of all the douchey outfits he'd worn, I figured this would have been the douchiest one. It was only mildly douchey, and frankly, given his natural coolness and ridiculously great physique, he pulled it off. So that was disappointing. He had a squad of security guys there, one of whom was a giant, towered over even Big Dave. Started cutting this promo. It was good about how Cena can't beat me, he's never beaten me, he never will beat me. He made fun of Cena's catchphrases, said the fans meant nothing to him, he was here for titles and money, doesn't see the fans as people. He doesn't see fans, he doesn't even see people, he sees them as money and dollar signs. He thanked the fat people for buying two seats, said, "You all pay to see me, thank you, I appreciate your money." And he said that Cena would disappoint the fans at Mania again. Cena finally came out. This was not his crowd. They chanted, "You can't wrestle at him," the babyface here in this pre-Mania promo. He expressed doubt and dissatisfaction, said he disappointed the fans as soon as Dave won the belt. Had never beaten him. Didn't think he had any chance. Woe is me. Sounded like Vince Russo, actually. And then Dave finally said, "Well, Cena admits it. He's a common loser, just like all of you people." And then somehow this lit a fire under John. And he said, "I am just like these people. And now that you've taken your glasses off, I see you're not the animal. You're just Dave Batista. And Dave Batista can't be beaten." So long story short, eventually Cena jumped him. The security guys pulled him off. Dave fled for the hills. And Cena stayed in the ring killing people. And that was it. And it did not light my world on fire.
Mania peaked early this year. Mentioned it before. But not a disaster.
The good news is not a lot of people watched this show.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the people that didn't watch the show weren't going to fucking buy Mania anyway. It's not a big deal. The 3-2 that... Actually, I can't say people are freaking out about. There's less than 5 people that I've seen freaking out about it getting a 3-2 and thinking this is the end of the world for WWE. Makes no fucking difference. They're doing 1 to 1.25 million buys on Sunday. Life's going to be great, so get over it, people. So there you go. That was Raw. That was Impact. We're going to do a couple of shout-outs here. It is a free show here today, so I want to do a couple of these. If you sign up for the website, you get a free shout-out. And if ever there was a time to sign up, this is it. It is WrestleMania weekend. As noted, this is my 4th show that I've done today. 5 shows in the last 24 hours. We got, what's today? Tuesday? We got another one coming up tomorrow with Dave. We got David Lagana on tomorrow. He's a former WWE creative team member. He's currently with Ring of Honor. So obviously he'll get all the scoops there. We had Andrew Goldstein on today, another former WWE creative team member. Talked a lot of cool stuff there. Alejandro, I don't remember.
He had many names.
That's what I told him. He had many, many names. Estrada.
Armando Rodrigo Alejandro.
Yes, he was on the show today talking about his new restaurant, which we'll be eating at this weekend as well. And that was fun. So Brian and Vinny's show, 2 to 3 times a week. The Dave Show, several times a week. Got a million different programs on this site. 5-Star Radio, Tough Talk, Dr. Keith Show, Carl Stern Show, 5-Star Radio, did I mention that? Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare. Did I mention Tough Talk? I
It seems like this is the first time you've plugged... Is this the first free show we've done in a while?
We do them every week. Anyway.
First time I've heard this speech in a while.
Just sign up, everybody. I'm hungry.
Great.
I don't got it in me right now to really... let me just read these shout-outs. All right. This person here says... This is for me and Brian Vinny. Finally decided to cash in my shout-out after joining just before the merger. I'm Ian! Although not the one with the worrying interest in Rick Steiner. And from Edinburgh in Scotland. Edinburgh.
Did he spell it out or
annoying
what?
The Scots. One free episode of your show every week wasn't enough for me, so I happily started paying for more. Since signing up, I've religiously listened to the audio, enjoyed the drops, made my own bad callee one, received many strange looks while laughing on the bus. Generally try and stay away from the madness of the board, but I do lurk occasionally. Want to give a shout out to one person, my ex-girlfriend, Nikki.
Uh-oh.
Both just moved out of the place we shared last week, so this will be the last time she has to listen to Brian's voice, which irritates her so much. How dare you?
Well, it's a good thing she's out of
your life,
then.
I'm glad you guys
then.
Broke up.
Yes.
She doesn't deserve a man like you. Thanks for all the content. Keep up the good work. There you go.
Do you want to give a hearty fuck
How
off to Nikki?
How could my voice irritate anyone?
You just sound like an angry Kermit.
I don't. Have you?
Oh, you do.
Has anyone ever actually listened to The Muppet Show, for fuck's sake? Sound like Kermit at all.
You do sound like Kermit.
No, I don't. Oh, Jesus. Matthew here wrote some poetry. The Rhyme of the Ancient Booker.
Uh-oh.
Hear the rhyme of the ancient booker. See Russo's eyes as they glare onto thee. And stay here and listen to the nightmares of TNA. Driven south to the land of Florida, to a place where unbridled money flows, given the booking sheet by those not in the know. The wrestlers cry out against this injustice, doomed to push the old and have matches with poles. Thus these hideous decisions spurred no growth. Bullshit, bullshit everywhere, and so the ratings sink. Bullshit, bullshit everywhere, and not a sane man intervenes. So the wrestling gods came with their vengeance. A terrible curse is placed onto thee. Thy fabled home in WWE never again shall see. Now Russo's bound to the curse of his fate, unable to learn from his past mistakes, yet he continues to tell his lies to any foolish mark that he saved WWE and made The Rock. That's from Matthew.
That was worth it just for the bullshit, bullshit everywhere line.
Fine poem right there.
I bet if I actually was familiar with the Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, I would appreciate it even more.
It's from Ed in San Antonio. What's up, Chico, Vinny, and the Empire? I have an update for everyone going to Mania. Because of poor planning by Brian, the Fogo
Here's
de Chao plans are out the window. So we have a new place, which is a lot closer to the ROH and Dragon Gate shows. New place is the Lone Star Steakhouse and Saloon. Hopefully no later than 5:45. All depends on how fast Chico and Craig can get there. Feel free to order before then if you need to, so we can make the shows on time. Also, me and Brian have an idea where to go for lunch before Mania. Hopefully, you'll hear more about it on Figure 4 Daily this coming week. That would be Baby Steak and Lemonade.
At Armando's restaurant?
Yes, it is.
Next time you have Armando on, I looked at the menu at his establishment.
We talked about the CM Punk stuff.
That was not what I was going to say.
Oh.
On his menu, there is a deep-fried cheesesteak. You must ask him if anyone has actually passed away in his restaurant. If anyone has eaten this and just died.
No one's died yet that I'm aware of. We did talk quite a bit about the restaurant.
That's good.
One man has asked for his money back. He didn't like a sandwich. And Alejandro made it very clear there's a lot of red tape to go through. But if you go through it all, he'll send you a check.
Well, that's good.
Everyone, please check out this Friday's Drunk Cast. Craig returns from his 3 weeks off. We're joined by the one and only Buddy Wayne. Oh, this was a long time ago. Oh, there you go. So yeah, Friday night... Lone Star Steakhouse and Saloon in Arizona, Phoenix. No later than 5:45. All the info's up on the board. You have to be a member to get it, so check that out. All right. Let's see. This person here says, Brian and Vinny, I jumped between freeloading to subscribing for 3 years. And I'm a board member of the board for life. I howl with laughter during every one. Thank you. Your show reignited my passion for wrestling with your wackiness. Because of your show, I enjoy watching wrestling again. Both shows suck. Need to push each other to get better. Hope this new war works. Decided to cash in my shout out now because it's my birthday anniversary with my girlfriend this week. Hope she likes my voice. for my shout-outs, I'd like to send one to my beautiful girlfriend, Vanessa, who makes my life better. If only you like wrestling more, I'd be in heaven. No, no, you wouldn't.
No.
No, you would not. Trust me on this one. Shout out to my favorite wrestler, Sting. I know he is over 50. He can only do so much in the ring. No more classic matches, but I'm still going to enjoy him on TV. He's the only reason I endure the bullshit that is TNA. Shout outs to Brian and Vinny. Brian, you're great. Stay angry. It's therapeutic. Vinny, you are funnier than you think. That's from Suntan Superman in San Jose.
Ron Killings?
Maybe.
Wow. Thanks, Ron.
From San Jose? Thanks, Ron. Really appreciate that.
It's nice of you to say.
And you deserve an S and vice versa. Unless she doesn't like my voice, in which case I'll rescind that. Alrighty. Oh, there's more from Ed.
Why aren't you reading my shout-outs?
It's exactly the exact same thing. Claudio Castagnoli is on this week. That should be fun.
They already had him on.
All right. This
he
is
talked about head blades.
Rohan here says, hello there, Mexican. And hello there, Polish Iraqi. I guess that's you, Vince. Don't know how he came
definitely
up with that.
Definitely not Iraqi. I don't think I'm Polish, although my background's very varied as entirely possible. The name is Dutch, everyone, if you must know.
Let's get to the point. Super happy shout-outs to Granny, Dave, Pepsi and all Pepsi-related products, the Green Bay Packers, and the hope of a better playoff run, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, Cheese String, my new 42-inch plasma screen, which I would bet is very thin, John Pollock and Y Ting from the Fight Network. Everyone join Review a Y Facebook group. Only after becoming Brian's friend. Fuck Vinny. Just kidding. Vinny's the man, he says.
Yeah.
Fuck offs to Punctuation on the Board, Bad Drivers, The Exposed, Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets DVD, Heroes of Wrestling, Dan Lavransky and Jason Agnew from The Law for not giving shout-outs. Your show sucks, and I can't believe Dave lowers himself by contributing to your boring-ass show. Wow.
Bitter man. I wonder if they're going to whine about taking cheap shots at their family.
I made two songs. Please play them. They are both under a minute. I know you have a thing about level, so I did the best I could. The F4W Rumble features all stars from the Empire, both past and present. Keep up the awesome work. That's from Doom Daddy. All right, we're going to play these two songs.
Great name, by the way.
Then we've got a WrestleMania song that we're going to play since this is the final Brian and Vinny show.
Oh, well, that's right.
Before WrestleMania. So I want to make sure to play that. So let's start with the F4W Rumble here by Doom Daddy.
It's very quiet.
Vince Verhey, Tony Leader, Brent, Brian Alvarez, Klitz, Ricky Ortiz, Oscar Pafunkst, Steve Maglia Zillamani, or whatever the fuck his name is, Kevin Ioli, Mexican Seafood, Jack Swagger, Hardcore Hogan, Gunther Von Kluge, Anchor, Granny, Layla, Maurice, Kelly, Michelle, Cherry, Natalia, and Victoria, Ed in San Antonio, Jimmy Lasers, Rabies, Contrere, Boogeyman, Hemi, Clever Hans, The Cancer,
Yawk Biscuit,
The Ugandan Giant,
Better having a Yawn Biscuit,
and Ken the Box and the Mecha Mummy. Those were in fact some shout-outs, yes.
You know, I don't think I'd be the favorite in that particular Royal Rumble, but
you'd do well.
Like those odds, yeah.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Well, I hit play and nothing happened.
Hmm. Very quiet. Songs.
Very quiet. I got it cranked, by the way. This is high as it goes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Doom Daddy. These were so quiet that I cranked everything up and you couldn't hear them. All right, everybody. Make sure you sign up. No better time than this week.
It's very important that you sign up.
WrestleMania week is literally the best time of the year to sign up. And I'm just telling you right now, sign up. Just do it. Let me play a WrestleMania song.
I used to treat my body like I'm living now. I know
wanted this. I'm glad to see him, because I ripped your fucking face out of a magazine. OG Gangstaline. Now after I shit your face, wipes that ass clean. Now time to get tipsy, and I don't want a bitch if she can't rub the balls like a gypsy.
There's more.
Who's all in? Since you put yourself on my dick, I put my nuts on your chin.
I hope the next time I'm asked to rap, it's better lyrics.
I have no idea where that's from.
Everybody knows and wants to know, but you don't know me. You don't know me. American white trash is up here, and then Canadian white trash is way down here.
See, I walk this earth every day, piss it off.
Because I got the largest arms in the world. You see that, Joe? That's a vein. Something you don't have, you little fat bastard.
So as you're in the hospital, on your back, screaming in pain, your wife will be on her back, screaming my name.
DVD! DVD!
There you go, Clint's done it again. And that's going to do it for today, everybody. Got lots of stuff still coming up before we head to Arizona. So check out the front page for more, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.
And listen to those four shows I did today, for fuck's sake.
Are they good?